Well, everyone, welcome to In the Thick and to a new reality. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, and this is ITT Sound Off. But Maria, before we get into our topics, I need to ask you, because obviously dramatic changes have happened the last couple of days with this pandemic. How are you feeling?
Yeah, so everybody, we are going to talk politics in a moment, and we're going to talk more about the virus. But we did want to just do a, because I've been traveling. I was on planes earlier this week.
Yeah, I know.
I was in Tucson. I was in Los Angeles. Everything felt very normal, I have to say. You know, there was no coughing or sneezing on the plane, like, at all. If you were doing that, you were, like, doing it into a pillow. Look, Julio, I am incredibly upbeat at this moment. So that is keeping me very grounded. I think my family is going through a challenging moment. My daughter, like yours, you know, pulled out of college her last semester of her senior year, you know, which is supposed to be the best time of your life. And so we're having a hard time there. But again, I keep putting it back to the privilege and to making the connection between people who are fleeing from life and death situations. And I want people to understand now that there is no difference between them and us. So that's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Is what this country has done and continues to do to the truly vulnerable, and that all of us keep that in mind.
Yeah.
So tell me about you, sweetie. How's the family and how are you?
I'm really happy to have everyone home. That's number one. And I think the privilege thing is so real. We both are in quote unquote hotspots. You're in New York. I'm in the Boston area. And to see things happening every day, you know, I'm talking about school districts up here closing. Having those conversations with your kids. But what's happening, I think, in general, is that people are looking at each other and saying, how can we help?
Exacto.
And I know that that is, there's a scary feeling here, but I think that's what's grounding me. And I absolutely agree with you, Maria. We're only as good as how we treat the most vulnerable people in our society. But why don't we get into the first topic?
Let's get to our first topic, which is going to be a 2020 election update. Who would have thought that the election in the United States would be like a secondary story? But it kind of is, even though it's also a huge story.
Quickly, too.
Because, you know, 2 weeks ago, we couldn't be saying this. I certainly didn't imagine this.
Right.
That Joe Biden would now be in the lead, basically, in terms of delegates. That he won Michigan, Idaho, Mississippi, and Missouri. All went for Joe Biden. Right now, Sanders won North Dakota, and Washington is still too close to call. I mean, this is truly, Julio, like an extraordinary unfolding of events. I still say, yes, it was the coalescing. Is it so much the love for Biden, or was it simply that the choices got reduced? Nonetheless, the Democratic Party has got some challenges.
Yeah, and if people are following the delegate count, and again, you know, Biden, as of this recording, he has 881 delegates. Sanders has 725. We're seeing the same pattern as we saw Super Tuesday. Biden is doing really well with older voters. Sanders is sweeping the youth vote. Biden, again, doing really well in the South with Black voters. Sanders getting the Latino vote. And the main thing about all this, Maria, is that older Democratic voters are just showing up and coming out more. It's very simple. Older voters are coming out, younger voters are not. And one of the things, Maria, you know, it was a weird night to cover politics because it was the early news of the coronavirus starting to happen. The big Tuesday election coverage became secondary very quickly. It was almost very subdued what happened on Tuesday. But what was interesting is I went on Instagram and I got a notification that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was going live on Instagram. And I watched her basically address what happened in these primaries.
One of the things that we're seeing is that there's a very strong generational divide. And this is something that I've encountered and something that I have noticed across many different issues. There's a generational divide in the Democratic Party on healthcare, on climate change, on foreign policy, on pretty much every policy imaginable. And as a younger person in this movement, I take that a lot of that as information for how we navigate the next decade. So there's like the electoral perspective and there's the movement perspective. And I think this is something that's really important that we talk about because electoral politics can be movement based. But movements aren't necessarily electoral in nature either. And the interplay and the relationship between these two things is something to pay attention to and something that's important.
So, Maria, you just heard AOC. She was on In the Thick back in the day. What do you think about what AOC said?
I think AOC is coming out a winner in all of this because of her authenticity, which is what people are dying to see in their politicians. And so I just think that she's keeping her feet on the ground. I think we understand, we've talked about it, that her power in the endorsement of Sanders was huge. I am very concerned about the lack of turnout among young people. I'm trying to understand, is it just because they do want to do it, but then they actually never remembered to register, or the day of the election, they just, you know, weren't in the right state or in the right time? Like, what is that about? Because Latinos and Latinas were turning out, but it's like the younger vote just didn't carry it. And I'm still fascinated by what you call the motivation of older voters to come out for Joe Biden.
You know, one of the things, Maria, that's clear to me with all this, because looking at Michigan, which Sanders won over Hillary Clinton in 2016, a lot of those same voters chose Biden, right? Working class, white, non-educated, or even white suburban voters, like college educated. And Bernie's platform really hasn't changed since 2016. So I think in 2020, the big difference is that he wasn't up against a woman. And so I feel like part of that Michigan vote was anti-Hillary Clinton.
Interesting, yeah.
In 2016 over pro-Bernie. And, you know, this whole notion of misogyny and electoral politics, I think once we get out of what we're in now, I feel like that has to be something that we need to continue to explore.
Oh, right. And you're convinced that all the male-run American mainstream media is going to do thoughtful work on...
No, but that's why I roll with you.
We're going to do it here.
Because I want to roll with you and some badass women and doing In the Thick down the road about all this, because I feel like it is a big takeaway of this electoral season. But listen, what's going to happen next? Because I do feel like this is where I think we can start looking at the pandemic and electoral politics. But talking a little bit about that, you know, a lot of Biden supporters were urging Sanders to drop after he underperformed on Tuesday. And I think a lot of this is also with, you know, the pandemic. People are kind of like, oh, electoral politics. I got other things to worry about. There's a case to be said. And on Friday, state of Louisiana became the first state to announce that it's postponing its primary until the summer. That primary was scheduled to be on April 4th. But at the same time, Sanders supporters are still reminding people that, you know, Biden's not even close to getting the delegates he needs to get the nomination. There's still 29 more states that have yet to vote, including Puerto Rico as a territory. So there you go. So on Wednesday, Sanders addressed the press and he said that he would stay in the race.
I cannot tell you how many people our campaign has spoken to who have said, and I quote, I like what your campaign stands for. I agree with what your campaign stands for. But I'm going to vote for Joe Biden because I think Joe is the best candidate to defeat Donald Trump. End of quote. We have heard that statement all over this country. Needless to say, I strongly disagree with that assertion. But that is what millions of Democrats and independents today believe. Donald Trump must be defeated, and I will do everything in my power to make that happen. On Sunday night, in the first one-on-one debate of this campaign, the American people will have the opportunity to see which candidate is best positioned to accomplish that goal.
So a couple of things. This Sunday debate is going to be audience free. It was going to be in Phoenix, Arizona, and then it got moved to D.C. because of the coronavirus crisis, also known as COVID-19. Audience free, no spin room. CNN, Univision are hosting the debate. Here's the thing, Maria. This is the part for me where I'm kind of like, are people just going to lose interest in this race because of the crisis?
There's so much that's shifting beneath our feet right now.
Yeah.
I think that it actually could spur people because, you know, the clear evidence of an administration lying in the middle of a public health crisis pandemic I don't know, though, because I worry about people who are so far into the Donald Trump sphere that they, I have heard in this past week, you know, people who I know saying things like, it's just a hoax.
Wow.
Yes.
What the fuck? I'm sorry. I don't know.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know. I think that we need to move on to our next topic, which is everything that's surrounding COVID-19. So everything is changing so rapidly because of how fast it's spreading, or actually the fact that it's been here, right, for a while and we didn't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of reports that are coming out about that, right? You're correct.
But the World Health Organization did declare a pandemic. There are over 125,000 confirmed cases, 4,600 deaths worldwide. In the United States, we surpassed 1,600 cases over 46 states with 41 deaths as of Friday morning. You know, right now, how do you rally people for getting involved in an election? Like Tuesday, March 17th, Florida, Arizona, Illinois, Ohio, coño, like super important states.
Swing states, yeah.
You know, in Ohio, polling places are being moved out of nursing homes and officials are encouraging early voting. But it does. This is like the worst case scenario, right, where people just don't turn out. OK, I'm going to say this. Please, everybody, just take a moment. It did cross my mind.
OK.
That this is another way that suppressing votes, sadly, that there will be probably people won't come out because they're too afraid.
Yeah, Maria. I mean, I don't know if you saw this, but talking about voting in this pandemic, there was a story out of Vox. Senator Ron Wyden, he's a Democrat from Oregon. He actually introduced a bill on Wednesday. And basically, and I'm quoting Vox, that bill would mandate states to set up emergency vote by mail systems, providing $500 million in federal money to help them get their election systems responsive to the worsening COVID-19 crisis. Wyden, he's working with multiple bill co-sponsors in the House, but the timing on when either chamber may vote on the bill is currently up in the air. You know, I think things are being done for the right reasons. I mean, Sanders and Biden canceling primary night events and possible future rallies, election officials in these states saying they're planning to deal with it by wiping poll booths and equipment every hour. I get what you're saying about voter suppression, but I think this is, there's something bigger here. I mean, I feel like this is changing. This is disrupting everything.
Everything.
So I know what you're saying, Maria, but I think we're also, as a country, as a world, as a society, are trying to figure out our lives are going to be different. And on Friday, President Trump declared a national emergency for the coronavirus. You know, Maria, on Tuesday, we missed you. I was talking with Jamila King, our fabulous guest co-host, and Jameel Smith, who came back. I felt like the band got together, but we missed like Paul McCartney. You know what I'm saying? Like we were the Beatles, but we missed you. But we were talking about this. And one of the things that I really got passionate about is the fact that we're putting a lot of attention on President Trump. And I know he's the president. And on Wednesday, he had this national address where he announced that the U.S. would ban all travel from Europe, excluding the United Kingdom and all trade. And then pretty much like 5 minutes later or 10 minutes later, State Department completely backtracks him, said it was banning only some foreign nationals who are coming from what is called the Schengen region, which includes countries like France, Italy and Germany. It's not going to apply to trade and goods. So basically, Trump's been going on this disinformation campaign. But to my fellow political journalist friends and colleagues, stop covering Trump. Stop it right now. It's not doing any help for this crisis.
No, I think that that's at the core.
Yes.
That we continue, the independent media continues to say, you are doing more damage by quoting him in any way, shape or form. But we've been saying this since he's been lying.
Forever.
You know, from the day that he announced his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists and murderers.
Yeah.
And we've been dismissed.
Yeah.
But why do journalists, I hate to say it, but it's because he's a white man.
Or just because I think we have this sense of like we're still
no,
like our
no.
Democracy. But not only is a white man.
No, if it was a woman, if it was Barack Obama.
OK, I feel you.
So much of this has to do with the fact that
I feel
Trump
you.
Is a white man of privilege.
I agree with you on that. But I also think that we still think that journalism and covering political leadership in America follows the same traditional formula. So it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, Maria. Anyone who watched the Trump speech, everyone's freaking out. The next day, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders both addressed coronavirus concerns. They spoke to the press. They gave statements. Both of them should be commended for being actually honest, reassuring, and providing real strategies about how to deal with this pandemic.
So on Wednesday, Senate Democrats introduced a proposal to deal with COVID-19 because, oh yeah, there are lawmakers. They could make laws. This bill would include things like emergency unemployment funds, eliminating co-payments for virus testing. Republicans pushed back, accused the bill of being too partisan.
Jesus.
McConnell was just like, this gonna hurt. This gonna hurt small business. And it's like...
You just did Mitch McConnell.
Okay.
It's like my bad Donald Trump impersonation.
So the House is expected to vote about this on Friday.
Yeah.
If it passes, which I think it's going to pass, the Senate will then likely vote on Monday. Who the hell knows what they're going to do? You know, cities all over the country are closing schools. The U.S. stock market continues to fall at record lows. Try not to look at that if you can, because there's so much fear and panic, and it just... We got to keep this calm and at the same time be demanding of our government and our institutions. Julio, you've seen me on my Twitter. I'm just like, yeah, think about how undocumented people feel every single day of their life in the United States of America. They walk out that door taking their life in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know what the hell is going to happen if they happen to encounter police or ICE or whatever.
Yeah.
And their whole life is over. I called undocumented people the kings and queens of existentialism, which right now, to get philosophical, we're going to have to live in an existential space. Our joy is going to keep us alive.
I agree. It's like, appreciate every waking moment right now. Like, this is the moment. I also think about my Puerto Rican brothers and sisters who lived without power.
Exacto.
And without, like, you know, food and water during, you know, 5 to 7 months in Hurricane Maria in 2017. And we still have internet. You know, we still have, you know, the privileged still have access to information. Think about the most vulnerable. But here's the thing, people. The government, we need to have more testing. This is ridiculous. This is sad, immoral, and beyond comprehension. And I just find it to be incredibly tragic, incredibly angering that the richest country in the world is so behind on testing its own people. You know what I'm saying? This goes beyond politics.
There's a lot of illusion here. You know, there's a lot of illusion that we live in the freest country. And we have to just make it very clear that there's like bigger ramifications, but also make it super personal. And in a lot of ways, start changing our lives. This is the last show that we will be recording in our studio here at Futuro Studios. We're going to be working remotely. And so, yeah, our fabulous engineers came to my apartment and installed a mini studio. So, you know, if you have the privilege to be able to work remotely, try and do that, because it's that you're just lowering the possibility of infection. There are a lot of people who live in this very capitalistic society that they don't have that option.
Yeah.
You don't have paid sick time. You don't have the resources. You don't have the childcare. I worry about you. I hope your neighbors are good to you. But if you can try and work remotely, this can help prevent spread, and it really will be helping your community, those around you, to stay healthy.
You know, I think it's important to understand that privilege, but also what can we do, right? You know, we can all avoid big crowds if you can. You can eat healthy, you can stay hydrated, you can wash your hands. And this is the part where the people that are healthy, you know, I look at health and consider it a blessing. And, you know, my daughter's a type 1 diabetic. And, you know, we're very concerned. We're like, you got to keep your glucose levels low. You have to take more care of yourself more than ever. And she has. I mean, so she is healthy and I'm healthy and my wife's healthy and my son's healthy. And that's a blessing. But that doesn't mean that you couldn't spread this to other vulnerable populations. So don't think that your health is a sign that you're never going to get this, right? And you need to be aware of that. Please think of others right now. And I will leave one last thing. I have been working remotely for about 6 or 7 years. So people can just tweet at me. I have all the tips about how to do it. If you have the privilege of working remotely Like, I'm giving out free advice. Julito 77, I know every tip about working at home.
Great.
So, Maria, with all this news, I mean, you mentioned joy, how important it is to be joyful. You have something that you might be doing this weekend that you want to share with people.
No, I am doing it this weekend. Speaking of joy, I am making a very, very big announcement on Joy Reid's show, AM Joy, on Sunday, sometime between 10 and noon Eastern time. I'm going to be making a big, big, big announcement, y'all. Yay! So tune in and be checking my social media feeds. And thank you, Julio, for being such a good co-host and partner and colleague throughout all the times thick and thin.
Hey, I will always remotely record with you anytime, Maria. So we're going to make this happen.
I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Regalo Varela.
Remember, dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us, because I bet you got some extra time on your hands, maybe. It really helps us. Also, remember that you can listen to us on Pandora, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In The Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends. Julio, we just had a big deal. What just happened? We got announced as the what?
We made a top 100 list for best political podcast on another podcast chart. And yay for us, because we've been around for 4 years and we're still a consistent political podcast show. So there. How's that?
It's fabulous. In the Thick is produced by Nicole Rothwell and Noor Saudi. Our audio engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our intern is Carla Arroyo. What's up, Carla? We're going to miss you. We're going to miss you. You did a fabulous job as an intern here on In the Thick. Thank you so much for the pieces that you produced and for being such a team player with our small
yes.
but loving team of In the Thick. So not goodbye. It's hasta la próxima. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Kept and ZZK Records. We'll see you on our next episode. Dear listeners, stay smart, stay healthy, stay positive. Thank you. Ciao.
Keep it real, guys.
Definitely be washing your hands for 20 seconds, like everybody. Be using your...
What, do you sing a song to that? Do you sing a song?
I just do the ABCs.
Oh, come on. You gotta be
I don't know any lyrics.
I do decisiones cada día. Alguien gana la ve mar. I sing Rubén Blades. Just letting you know.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.